Cindy Cash is with us today, Johnny Cash's daughter, and boy, was this a good episode. Can't wait for you to see it. Let's go.
From the farm that Johnny Cash called the center of the universe, this is the Jack Vail Podcast.
I like Willie, and I like Waylon. You want me to ride, you gotta play some George Jones and Conway Twitty. Just keep it country, cause I'm here, Billy. Like a little bit of hip-hop, give me some Man in Black.
You can kiss my cash.
And I hope you didn't get that on tape.
What do you think we're doing here, Sydney? We're getting the whole thing on tape.
No, you're not. You have to cut that out.
I don't know.
Who's okay, doing so, my...
Yeah, we're
I didn't even think we'd started.
That's how it works. It's very casual.
We're doing
okay,
that.
We're yeah, starting
we're
over.
Starting okay, right don't worry. Listen.
Thank you.
I promise. You have my word. I would like to have a good relationship with you, if that's possible.
That's possible.
So we'll be very careful. Possible. Yeah, I was telling you that when we moved here in 2017, I secretly always wanted to move to Nashville, pictured myself here. I didn't understand how bad the weather could be at times. Ugh. But especially being in Southern California where it's awesome kind of all the time.
Yeah.
And at the beach. So when you said you felt like that was home and this was home, that's why I was looking over at Jake because he remembers. Yeah, we were like, yeah, we feel the same way. Like we'll go visit and we feel like, oh, we're home. And then we come back. And we're like, okay, we're home.
But, I mean, I grew up in Dad's house since I was 10, you know, and you know his house burned down 8 years after he passed away.
Oh, can I tell you something about that?
That killed me, sure.
Oh, yeah, I bet. So there was a story about the house in Hendersonville, the lake house. Mm-hmm. And I remember finding out about the story that it sold. And
yeah,
one of the Bee Gees.
Barry Gibb.
Yeah, okay, bought it. Okay, so I knew that.
And we thought about keeping it. We thought about selling it. And then we thought, all seven children keeping that house? No way.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have just been. And we had a house in Jamaica, too, that we couldn't decide what to do with.
Okay. So it sold for, in my opinion, like a ridiculously low price.
Low price. Yes.
I couldn't believe it. In fact,
I couldn't believe it either.
I found out that it was for sale. And at the first time it went up for sale, I called the listing. Okay. So this was a long time before we moved here. Okay. This was a long time ago. Yeah. I called the listing that I found on this house. I swear to you, we had already bought a couple of houses and I thought to own Johnny's house. I mean, I got goosebumps thinking about how that made me feel. I'm like, what an incredible thing. It needs to be preserved. It needs to be like really. And, so I called the number associated with it on the listing.
Which was my uncle.
It was Tommy, yeah. And I didn't know. I had no idea. It was just the listing agent. You know, I don't even think his name was there. And I called and I talked to him and he was telling me about how, you know, nobody knows that house is as good as he does and all this kind of stuff. And he started giving me these clues. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but I think he was saying like he was dropping these hints that he's directly associated with the house. He would talk about his, you know, his family and stuff like that. And I remember thinking, this guy's a member of the family. And then after I hung up with him, I did some more research and Tommy Cash, oh, that's his brother, you know? And I just remember thinking, it's so weird being a fan of like the most epic, iconic person in country music, or maybe not even that, maybe just period in the music business. And then you've talked to his brother, you know, I don't know, as I was 30 something, but I just remember thinking that was so cool. And I was close. I mean, I really was close. I thought, wait a minute, this is doable. And then the house sold
you're
for
the
like
second person this week that I've talked to that said they almost bought it.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I was always looking for an excuse to move to Nashville. So when I found out about that, I just thought, this is it. This is it. And then it didn't make sense because of all of the work that I found out that needed to go into the extra money, you know.
I mean, Dad and June never did anything to like reconstruct or just restore that house. Mm. That house only had the two round rooms on the second floor, mm-hmm. and then you have to go down a flight of stairs on each side, and then there was the first floor, and that was it. Mm. There was two bedrooms, only two. But and Dad had four twin beds in our room, mm-hmm. and they were like in the shape of a cross, kind of where we could all talk. Our heads all met in the middle of the room, mm-hmm. you know, because they were all, and that was all that was in there. And there were four identical closets mm. for the four of us girls. And then to get to his room, you had to go down the stairs all the way across the first floor and then up the stairs to his room. Mm. And in the middle of the night, we would get so scared and we'd all four be running across the floor. Daddy, Daddy, we're scared. Mm. Well, when Dad and June got married, the next summer we came back, the whole second floor had been built so that you could go from his room to our room all the way across. And then the third floor, which was their new master bedroom and two other bedrooms. And also our room had a room divider right down the middle. And one side was for one of June's daughters and the other side was for her other daughter. And
no
we
kidding.
Slept on the floor.
Really?
And it just devastated us. Like, how could this be? I mean, where's our room? Where are we? You know, we do come, we only come in the summer, but still our room is gone. I mean, and it was just, I'll just never forget that. I just kind of really kind of hurt.
Yeah.
And I said, Daddy, where's our room? And he goes, we're going to build another room for you. And they did build two extra rooms. But by the time we came back the next summer, Rosie, who is June's daughter, there was a Roseanne and a Rosie. Mm-hmm. Roseanne's my full sister. Rosie's June's daughter. She was in one of the rooms and Carlene was in the other room. And John Carter was still sleeping in the room with Dad and June. Mm. And so we were able to go back to that round room, all four of us in there. Mm. But it just, I don't know, Dad just didn't think about things like that, you know. Mm. But it was hard for us to come back that next summer and our room was gone.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that that house didn't always look like that.
It was, yeah.
It was not near as big as, it was 13,000 square feet. And and before June opened up the second floor and added the third floor, I don't know what the square footage was, but it was half that, not even less than half.
So Barry Gibb bought it for like, if I'm gonna see if I get this right, not that much over a million. Like it was,
it was 1.8, I think. It was nothing.
And I think 1.8 was actually one of the first initial prices, and I think
highest.
He negotiated it down to like 1.2 or 3.
Because
or,
all of us split the money. I think it sold for 1.3.
Yeah.
1.3.
That sounds familiar.
In California, that house would have cost $5 to $10 million.
Well, I do remember Tommy told me on the phone that, because that was one of the things that kind of got in the way of being able to get it, because I'm like, look, this is Graceland. And he's like, yeah, you're not the first. Like everybody wants to do that with it. But because of the location of it, it wouldn't take, you know, like it would be just too hard. The city wouldn't let it or something like that. There's some kind of an issue with not making it a touristy place.
I grew up with about 30 tour buses a day coming down the road.
They
so could
have.
I don't
they
think they'd have any
it.
Trouble going there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, I remember one time, I think I was 12 and we were swimming in the pool. The pool was down at the bottom originally. And then the lake water kept hitting it until it was cracking. So Dad put the pool on the third floor and he turned it into a big terrarium, like a plants and everything. But I remember going up to him one time and going, Daddy, these people are taking pictures of us in our bathing suits and everything. You know what he said to me? Those people built that pool for you. I never complained about that pool again. Or those tourists. I heard him say one of the coolest things ever one time. Ralph Emery was interviewing him and he goes, when you take your family out to dinner and you're trying to have quality time with your kids and your wife, and what do you do when people walk up to you and ask you for your autograph when you're in the middle of eating? And he said, I put my fork down.
Wow.
what a priceless, wow.
Isn't it not amazing?
Wow.
Just for, I mean, that's how he thought.
Yeah.
He was so humble.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
We knew you would walk in here right in the middle of everything.
We fully expected, yeah.
You're interrupting our interview.
I brought your makeup kit.
Oh, my God.
Are you my makeup artist?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm in charge.
Everybody run.
Don't say anything bad about the farm, okay?
Oh, I'll try not to.
Too late.
Be honest about your dad. how much you love this
place. Have I ever been dishonest about my dad?
But did you say anything about me yet?
We haven't even got to the farm
yet.
We just started. We just started.
What's going on?
Thank you.
I'm going to listen. And if I raise my hand, that means...
I won't be watching you.
Don't believe a word she says.
We pick on each other all the time. I love it. Can you tell?
I can tell.
Yeah.
That's fascinating, though. I remember there's a lot of celebrities.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to have my back to you.
Oh, no. However you're comfortable.
Are you guys both interviewing me?
No. Okay. He's my co. He's here to ask questions when something pops in.
Okay, but I didn't mean to have my back. He's so good looking. I don't want to have my back to
it. You may as well just face it.
I'm going to move this pillow because it's not. It's kind of.
It's not good enough to look at me.
No, I'm just going to move it. It's not comfortable.
You know what?
Do you not even want a pillow? Do you want to sit here in this corner?
That's going to mess you guys up, isn't it?
If I move it. No, not at all. No. You can do whatever you want. Whatever you're comfortable with.
Here, I might hold a pillow.
Okay, yeah.
Like,
do you know who was here before was your friend John Schneider, did they tell you?
What's that?
John Schneider.
What about him?
He was here.
Did you do him today?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I missed him.
I know. He was like kind of in and out. He had to catch a flight or something like that.
Yeah, that's how
it usually is. But he hated my couch, so if you hate it, I apologize. He hated
couch?
That. Yeah, he hated it.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty uncomfortable.
He griped about my couch like you wouldn't believe. And I'm like, fine. So,
thanks. Yeah, I knew I messed you up by taking the pillow.
Totally but then as soon as the podcast actually started filming, he was still talking about my couch. And he goes, yeah, your couch sucks.
What time did he leave?
12.
See, if I'd have been on time, 20, I could have said 20, hello to him.
Something like that. Maybe, yeah.
No comments from the peanut gallery.
So
I was fashionably late.
So I have to be a fan of your dad here for a second. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So I keep saying when we moved here in 2017. To me, when we moved here in 2017, one of the first things I wanted to do was finally drive up that street and see that house.
Yeah.
And of course it was gone,
gone.
But and I knew that it was gone, but I still something about that rock wall and whatever was still there, I wanted to see. And
it absolutely broke my heart when that house burned down.
Yeah. You know, it was a few years ago. Brian, I think, was thinking about selling the house across the street, the Mama Cash house.
Yeah.
And that's actually where I met him. Because it was like maybe my second chance to... since the first deal didn't, and so,
Roy Orbison's mother lived next door to Grandma.
Yes,
and then Roy Orbison, of course, lived next door to Dad.
Yeah,
and so they were all right there. Then we won't talk about who bought it after that. But
yeah, well, I went to go see the house because a friend of mine,
Grandma's house.
Yeah, and I went to go see it, and I think that it was really quite an experience because I did not realize that they had spent their last several months or whatever in that house.
They had moved to that house because Dad couldn't get up and down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dad had an elevator put into his house. Well, after June died, I moved into the house with my dad, and it was just me and him the last 3 months of his life.
Into his house
back on the lake.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Dad put an elevator in.
Wow.
And I moved in with him after June died because he was completely alone in that house except for employees.
Mm.
And I went up there to see him a week after June died, and I had just got married. And I never left. I said, I can't leave you here by yourself with your staff. I just can't do it. And I never left him. I never left that house except for one time to go to Walmart because he wanted sugar-free chocolate. But other than that, I never walked outside the door.
Really?
I never left his side.
For how long?
Pardon?
For how long?
Until the day he died.
Yeah.
Which was 3 months later, 3.5 months later.
Wow.
And the day he died is a really horrible, sad story. I mean, I had not left his side at all. Every morning before the sun was up, Cindy, I need coffee, and I'd go get his coffee. And then as soon as it would start getting dark, he'd say, I got to go to bed. And I said, why? He goes, it's getting dark. Because he was 95% blind. which I didn't find out how blind he was until just a few months before June passed. That was another reason that I really needed to move in with him, because his staff was not doing their job. They were not vacuuming anymore. They were getting there at 7 o'clock. By 7:15, they were outside taking a smoke break. And finally, one day I said, Dad, they're not doing their job. They're not. June's, your bedroom hasn't been vacuumed in a month. And he goes, really? So he picks up his Terry phone. It's a little phone with an intercom where you can hear what he's saying in every room in the house. And he goes, good morning, ladies. This is John. From now on, when Cindy tells you to do something, pretend like it's me talking. Have a nice day. And I looked at Dad and I went, you just got me killed. They're going to kill me. And he goes, no, they're going to listen to you. Mm. And I went outside and I said, Dad's bedroom has not been vacuumed in a month. Could you guys please, you've only been here 15 minutes and you're already taking a break. So I did it. And that vacuum cleaner was running 10 minutes later. It was sad to see how they were taking advantage of him because they knew he couldn't see.
How many other people in the house were there?
There was three sisters, three women that were, they were all three sisters and then a niece. And the niece was a sweetheart. She would come and cook for him every night still. Mm-hmm. And Dad had to fire one of them because for a lot of reasons. But when she left, her two sisters went with her. So it was me and their niece, and that was it. Mm. And to see how they treated him after June died, after all he had done for them, free houses, free cars, you know. And once in particular, I had told him that I saw her and the things she stole. And he said, honey, June won't let me fire her. So as soon as June passed away, he fired her. She threw a fit and took her family with her. Mm. It was really, really sad. And I know I shouldn't be saying that all, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. And then she wrote three books. Because she was so mad that really? He fired her. All he said to her was, you've disrespected me, my family, my children, my wife, and my home. You're fired. And she said, what? I mean, she just was like, and he said, I'll repeat myself. You've disrespected. And she had. She had started acting like it was her house. And I saw her walk out with things that didn't belong to her. I mean, I personally did, and Dad knew it. Mm-hmm. And I would tell him, this was before June passed, and he'd say, honey, if I can't take it to heaven, I don't need it. Or he'd say, if she can live with it, I can live without it. I mean, that's all he would ever say. And then nothing ever happened. I mean, she stayed. And then when June passed, my brother called me and said, we need to talk to Dad about this woman. So we went to talk to him, and before we could say one word, he goes, guess what I'm going to do in the morning? I'm going to fire her and then said her name. And he did.
And he did. What was his demeanor? What was Johnny's demeanor like most of the time? Because I think people have two perceived notions of him.
Raised his voice to me in my entire life.
Really?
Never. Uh-huh. Never raised his voice to anyone. I never heard him and June have a fight, which is amazing. 36 years of marriage. They just never fought. And if we would start fighting with each other, he would say, please take it outside. No, there's no yelling in my house. Mm. He just was he didn't like arguing. He didn't like confrontation. He just liked peace, peace and quiet. And he just never yelled. He never yelled at us.
That feels like it kind of makes sense and matches how people see him, because he had this like interesting combination of like a rough, manly exterior, especially with the voice and everything, but then also seemed like he had a really soft heart.
He had a soft heart. He had his faith. He had his faith, I think, is what kept him on an even keel almost all the time. He would say, there's two of me. There's Johnny and there's John. John's the good guy. Johnny's not.
Really?
But that was talking about, you know, years ago. But I think coming to this farm is where he got his peace. I'm not kidding you. I really believe that with all my heart, that this is where he reconnected with God. This is where he got his strength. This is where he made promises to himself and to God. And this was where he found all the peace that he had in his heart. Because he was a peaceful man. He was a very peaceful man. He was a very wise man. He read all the time. He loved to read. And when he lost his eyesight, when I moved in with him, I would sit on the floor in his office and read books to him.
Really?
Yeah. And he
wow.
You can cut it. About his farewell to the farm.
Okay, I'll tell that story.
A very moving story. When she first found out he was blind.
Yeah. I knew he was losing his sight, but I didn't know quite how blind.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought him. He called me up he didn't call me because I was living with him. What am I saying? He called me up all the time to come to the farm with him, and I did. But this one day, he said, "Take me to the farm," and I said, "Okay." So I drove him here, and I helped him walk inside where the library is.
Had June already passed?
Yes. Okay. Yes. This was right after she passed.
Okay.
And so I took him. I walked him into the library, the side entrance of the farm, and he just kind of stood there for a minute. He sat at his desk. He pulled a book off the shelf, and he was thumbing through it, and it was upside down. And he just kept thumbing through it, and he didn't want me to know. I mean, he never complained, ever, about anything. Mm. How much pain he was in, that nothing, he just never complained. And he was going, and he put the book back, and he goes, "Walk me through the house, baby." I said, "Okay." So we start walking through the living room, and we walk into the next room, and he's looking, and he's pointed to the bottles in the window that he had found, all these old, old bottles on the property. And he said, "I want you to take those home with you. Just take them home with you." I said, "Okay. Why? They've been sitting there for like 30 years, Dad." And he goes, "I just want you to take them home." I said, "Okay." So I got him and put him in the car and left him, you know, just standing there. He was doing something, looking looking in cabinets and stuff. When I came back in, he said, "I'm ready to go." We'd been there 10 minutes. And I said, "Are you sure?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm ready to go." And I knew he was saying goodbye to the farm. Mm. I knew that was when he was saying goodbye.
Mm.
It was really sad.
Where are those bottles today?
I had them at my house. And when Brian and Sally bought the farm, Brian, are you still in here? No. I told him that I wanted to put them back in the window. So, I mean, they're still my bottles, but they're still in the window. I put them back.
Yeah, Brian mentioned something about the bottles the other day.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I don't think he wanted me to give them away. I think he just wanted me to put them back in the window. And then I took him to see June's grave one day. I got to do all the fun stuff. He hadn't seen her grave yet, and so the owner of the funeral home was the nicest man. He was always so good to our family. And he put Dad in the golf cart because Dad couldn't walk anymore. He was in a wheelchair. And we went up to June's grave, and he was, you know, doing this thing. Wait, I can't see it yet. I need to focus. I can't see it yet. And then he just was still for a minute, and he goes, "I see it. I'm coming, baby. I'm coming." And I said, "Dad, please don't talk like that in front of me." And he goes, "Oh, honey, I'm sorry." And he turned back to her grave, and he said, "But I'm coming, baby." And we left. That was all I said. It was so sad.
Mm.
He was ready to go be with her. He never slept in the marital bed ever again once she died.
Really?
No, he put a hospital bed in his office, which was the smallest room in the whole house. I mean, you could barely put a bed in there. It was so small because I had all his books were in the bookcase, on the bookshelves, you know, and then he had his favorite things hanging in there. He had what he called a prayer stick that he had carved himself and then wrote all over it. Sorry about that. He wrote all over it. He wrote things like eyesight, ; don't care, career, ; And then he wrote, "Come on, family. Come on, family." Just things that meant something to him or things he was worried about. And then it said, God, family, home. Billy Graham, for some reason. I don't know why it said Billy Graham, but it said Billy Graham. I've got this prayer stick. And so, he had drilled a hole through it with he had a toolkit for leather. And then he put a leather strap strapped through it and had it hanging on the wall in his office. And I am so glad I got that.
Yeah.
Because it obviously was very important to him. Because he made it and he wrote everything on there that didn't meant something to him and didn't mean something to him.
Yeah. I remember years ago seeing him tour with Billy Graham, I think.
Oh, yeah. They were very close.
Yeah.
Very close friends.
Did Billy Graham ever come out either to the farm or to the house?
Oh, yeah. A lot. And I have pictures of him swimming in our pool in Jamaica with no shirt on.
In Jamaica?
Yeah. We had a house in Jamaica since I was 13.
How many times have you been there?
Every year. I went there every year with
him. You went to Jamaica?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
And
that's
had this house built in 1741. It was an old plantation mansion.
In Jamaica?
Yeah.
In 1741?
1741. And it was amazing. And it still had the dungeon in the basement with the bars.
No way.
Where they would lock up slaves that tried to run away. And it still had the whipping post out back.
No way.
Dad took it down and you could just see the concrete that it was in because he didn't want it there. And we would go metal. Me and Dad taught me how to metal detect when I was 16, and I still do it.
Really?
I love it.
It's addicting.
It's addicting, yes. Yeah. And he dug up probably over 50 handcuffs from the slave days.
Wow. Like around that area?
In the front yard and the backyard. They were put in this little shack that he had there, and I don't know if they're still there or not, but the house has been kept exactly like he left it, and we sold it back to friends of his that sold it to him, and she's kept it the same way he left it rinse it out, I think, by the week or something.
Wow.
It's right above Rose Hall, great house, that's open to the public. Like the lady that lived there, they called her the White Witch of Rose Hall. Because she killed all three of her husbands.
Oh, God.
Dad even wrote a song about her. Her name was Annie Hall. Where's your husband's Annie? Where's numbers 2 and 3? Are they buried beneath the palms beside the Caribbean Sea?
Ooh.
It's a great song.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I was always like, I liked, just like everybody else, liked the early Cash songs, but there was something really special to me about the American Records stuff. And I think it was because
His career was just, I mean, started that ball over again.
There was like nobody in the world cooler than Johnny Cash's last.
Thank you. I agree.
Those years were unbelievable. Like to see that come back and then become familiar with like his story. And there was such a rawness in his voice and stuff like that. But then he would sing about stuff. Thing that I really loved about him was he was so sensitive toward the Holy Spirit. He was sensitive toward God. And he really was. But at the same time, my name it is Sam Hall.
Yeah, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him.
Yeah, like all the stuff that he's saying with Delia. Oh, Delia.
Yeah, do you know that he got letters from battered women because of Delia's Gone?
Oh, no
way.
And
do you know that he sat in his office for 8 hours and hand wrote every one of those women back saying, explaining to them that it was an old folk song written in the 40s, that his biggest charity is battered women's shelters, and he does not approve of men hitting women. And I mean, just, and a hand wrote every one of them.
Because of Delia?
Because it broke his heart that women thought he was not against battering women.
Oh, man.
And because of Delia and the video.
We listen to that song and just laugh every time.
I know. It's supposed to be kind of funny.
Lighthearted.
But these women, it just devastated him that these women thought he wasn't against battered women.
Yeah.
And he wrote every one of them a handwritten letter.
Wow.
Like, Dad, it's okay.
So were you around? Where were you during the time that, like, I'll just give you a specific point of reference. When he met Rick Rubin. And they started working together. What was going on in your life at that time?
I was living in Nashville. I was living in Hendersonville.
So you must have been here a part of all that or
let's see,
around.
Wait a minute. What year was that? When he started working with Rick Rubin.
Would have been early 2000, like 2000 to 2002 or 3 or something.
I was
like
in
that,
California. My daughter had just had a baby.
Okay.
I have been trying to find Rick Rubin, a number on him, an address. I want to thank him for what he did for my dad. Mm. And nobody seems to have a number or an address on him.
I'll find him
for
you.
I've asked my brother, and he said he doesn't even have one.
Rick Rubin.
Yeah, I really want to get in touch with him.
Yeah.
You want to hear the funniest story ever about Dad and Rick Rubin?
Yeah.
This is the funniest story ever. Yeah. Okay, if any of us daughters were living with a guy and we weren't married, he would not come visit us. He said, if you want to see me, I got to come to my house. I'm not coming to your house while you're living
your
with
your dad?
Somebody. Yeah. Well, Rick Rubin comes to Dad's and he's going to spend the night there because they're going to start working early in the morning at the cabin across the street from Dad's. And so Rick Rubin shows up with his girlfriend and we're all at the dinner table and I was sitting right there. And so I'm so glad I was because I could not quit laughing. Dad is at the head of the table and we all held hands and say grace always. And as soon as we're done, as soon as Dad says, he ended every prayer with lead, guide, guard, and direct us. Amen. And he looked at Rick Rubin and he goes, are y'all married? And they hadn't known each other very long. And Rick said, no, we're just dating. And he goes, okay, well, Rick, you'll be sleeping in the blue room over here. And you will be sleeping in the white room upstairs. And he goes, Rick Rubin goes, you're kidding, right? And he goes, no, I'm not kidding. And Rick Rubin goes, you're kidding. And Dad goes, no, I'm not kidding. He goes, I don't let people sleep in my house unmarried. I don't let them people sleep together in my house if they're unmarried.
Oh, dude.
And they slept separate that night.
Rick, I'm just picturing Rick Rubin with his, like this man, you know.
I loved it. I couldn't even breathe. I was laughing so hard.
How many people
That's
were
why
that?
Rick was going, you're kidding, right? Because he's looking at me laughing. And he goes, no, I'm not.
How many people in the family were there during that time, that prayer?
See, it was just, I think I was the only daughter, the only child of theirs that was there. It was June, Dad, Rick Rubin, his girlfriend, me. Oh, and my husband, Eddie, who died. Okay. He was killed in a motorcycle wreck.
Okay.
In 2009. But he was there.
Wait a minute. There's something about yours. There's something about your story about, like, you've had more than one husband killed the same way.
I had. My husband was killed in a motorcycle wreck in 2009, which was horrific. Somebody ran him off the road. And he didn't come home that night. I knew he was dead. I already knew it. And it was horrific. It was horrible. And then 6 years later, I moved here, and my boyfriend from the fifth grade, he was my first love from the fifth grade. We started dating again 6 years after my husband died. It took me that long before I didn't feel like I was cheating on my husband. And I moved back to Tennessee, and he followed me. I bought my own house. He bought a house. And I'd had dental surgery that morning, and I woke up around 6. He was supposed to be home at 3:30, and it was dark. And I thought, well, I guess he decided to stay longer. He was going to go have a beer with a buddy. And a sheriff knocks on my door and says, do you have horses? I said, yeah, we have 4. And he goes, well, they're all out in the road. I said, no way. That means they haven't been fed. They only break out when they haven't been fed. I said, was my boyfriend out there, or my fiance out there? Because we had just gotten engaged 2 weeks before that. And he said, I didn't see anyone. And I said, would you please call on your radio and see if a John LaSalle has been hurt or is in a hospital or anything? And he, just like this, he said, okay, yes, ma'am, he's dead. I said, what? And he said he was killed in a motorcycle accident about 7 o'clock this evening. I said, no, he wasn't. And I literally shut the door in his face and went back to bed. I was in denial. I couldn't do it again. Not again. No way. So I woke at 6 o'clock the next morning, Channel 4 wakes me up. We're doing a story about the potholes in Nashville. It got dark. He hit a pothole. If he'd got home in the daylight, he would have seen it. But it was dark. So he hit a pothole and was killed instantly. And they said, we're doing a story on the potholes in Nashville. Could you send us a picture of your fiance? And that's when I knew he was dead. And with my husband that got killed, I filed a missing persons report immediately because I knew he was gone. And this cop goes, ma'am, I wouldn't worry about it too much. He's probably in a motel watching kiddie porn or something.
You're kidding.
I said, get out of my house right now.
What on earth?
A cop said that to me. I said, get out of my house right now. My daughter was sitting there. Hmm. I said, my husband doesn't watch kiddie porn. My husband's gone. I know he is. And my son-in-law found his body the next day. His bike went over a 150-foot ravine, and his body was 6 feet from the road, but the grass was this tall, so nobody could see him. Well, my son-in-law went around that corner for the third time and saw a black glove and stopped and started walking around and found his body. Mm. And he'd been there 27 hours. Mm. It was horrific.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, I don't know how I got through both of those things. It was awful. I lost seven people when Dad passed. Seven people had died in an 8-month period in my family. My aunt, it was June, my dad, my aunt, my stepsister, Rosie, died 30 days after Dad. And then one of our really close friends, it was seven people, I don't remember. It was just traumatic. It was very traumatic. Well, and then my mom was next, and then my husband. Mm-hmm. My mom died 2 years after Dad, but she shouldn't have died. A nurse gave her a drink of water after lung surgery, and she drowned. And the doctor had told them, don't give her one drop of water. And my mom woke up saying, I'm thirsty. And this nurse gave her a drink of water. Mm. So it was tough. Okay, back to the happy stuff.
Wow. I couldn't imagine. Everybody has, you know, these certain things in their life that...
Especially when you've never lost anybody.
Yeah, and then it just, like, everything all at once.
Yeah,
it seems
except
like it
grandparents.
Happens. How many siblings do you have?
I have three full sisters.
Three full sisters.
And one half-brother.
And one half-brother.
And one step-sister.
So your half-brother is John. Okay. And Roseanne is your full sister. Yeah. It is... What are things like today? Like, how close is the family today? Like, the siblings, are you guys?
It feels like we're drifting apart a little bit, and it's sad to me because it feels like everybody's just kind of into their own world. And I talk to Tara, my youngest sister, all the time. We communicate all the time. And Kathy lives here; she lives about an hour from me, mm-hmm. and we keep in touch. Mm-hmm. Roseanne and I don't talk much at all. Mm-hmm. And then John Carter and I keep in touch with text pretty often.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all love each other. I mean, mm-hmm. There's nobody, you know, on bad terms with anybody.
What about cousins? What about Mark?
Mark and I are very close.
Yeah.
He's like my brother.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I mean, we're more like brother and sister than cousins. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, our dads are brothers, so.
Yeah, right.
And then... I have a lot of cousins, and when I see them, we love each other, we hug each other, and I just don't get to see them that much, you know. Mm-hmm. I go see my Uncle Tom. He's 83 now, Mark's dad. Mm-hmm. I've been to see him a couple of times recently, he's looking pretty old. And then Aunt Joanne, my dad's youngest sister, she's 85.
Mm. Things change, huh? Like later on, things change.
Things don't stay the same.
I know. I recently we went out to see a bunch of my family who lives in Oregon, and
Tara lives in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, no kidding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my family lives further, like more towards like Medford, Grants Pass, like the other direction.
Yeah. My husband and I almost moved to Medford.
Really?
We loved everything about it.
Yeah. We were in California and. My whole life, I was raised in California, so my brothers and a lot of my family and aunts and uncles and stuff ended up moving to Oregon because it was close to California, but up in the mountains and away, yeah, and like away from California politics. I remember that at one point it was away from California politics,
yeah.
and then now it's kind of like meshed together. It's all the same now, but I we went out there recently to visit like people for the first time in years and. We just a lot of us complained about that the whole time. Like, things are just different now, huh? What's going on? I don't know what it is. I almost wonder sometimes if there's so much social media stuff going on, if that's really
taking
a toll on all of us.
It has.
We are addicted to our screens. We're spending all this time on this, that, and the other, you know.
Instead of talking on the phone, we're texting.
Yeah.
Which keeps, you can't really tell a person's feelings from text.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't like about texting.
Yeah.
When my dad got his first cell phone, it was one of those flip ones, you know, they had just come out.
Yeah.
He's tried it for 10 minutes and threw it out the window into the lake. Anything he didn't like went out the window of his office and into Old Hickory Lake.
Yeah.
And the phone went in the lake. He said, "All right, I've had enough of this." I said, "Dad, it's been 10 minutes. Do you want me to show you anything?" He goes, "Nope." It went out the window.
Yeah. You know,
we also rolled his wheelchair off the boat dock into the lake after he died. Just my four siblings and just John Carter and us four girls rolled it off the boat dock and into the lake.
Wheelchair?
He hated it. He hated being in a wheelchair.
That was like a celebratory thing to do. You know?
He would have loved that.
He would have. Yeah, seems like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been, wow. Yeah, I get tired of it too. I'm at an age now where I'm starting to like think about that stuff more and go, man, you know what really matters in life? And I think we're spending too much time doing stuff that doesn't matter. And
amen.
Yeah. I'm so grateful to, you know, like being able to do this podcast. I've wanted to do this for a long time. You know, I'm grateful to it because, like, you know, being able to come out here, it is such a serene and quiet place to be.
This farm is the best.
I can't even
imagine.
Anybody
out there, if you ever get a chance to come to this farm, mm-hmm. it's open to the public.
Yeah.
And it is so worth it. People come here and cry.
Yeah.
They leave here crying.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard some of these stories and I completely get it. Like, you know, at one point I came out here by myself. Nobody else was here at all. And I was still kind of setting all of this stuff up. And I just kind of got lost. I didn't even tell Brian this, but I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to just come out here. Like, I parked here and then I just walked and I just got lost. I went all the way over there and the sun was setting. It was getting kind of dusk.
And it's beautiful.
And I thought, man, I had a moment with God. I just prayed. I was able to just thank him for this moment.
Right.
And then in the back of your head, you're thinking about your dad being out here. And
I loved it.
You know what's funny, Cindy? I was a fan, but really not a fan. Like, I didn't. It was 2003, maybe. Is that when Unchained came out, Jake? In
2003 is when Dad passed away.
So, okay, so the date's wrong. So, Unchained came out, and then there was American Recordings too. And I might
Unchained
be switching this up.
It's on American Recordings.
96. It was it was the first one on American Recordings, right. I think, right? So Unchained came out, and he was a baby in the back seat, you know. And I remember, what were you, 4 or 5 or something like that? Yeah. Maybe something, 6, 5, 6.
Something like that.
And I got this CD from an old record store, and I popped it in, you know. And I was only familiar at the time with the famous songs that everybody's already heard. But this was new.
Yeah.
And this was a freaking, like, this was a cool-looking old
Cage.
Guy with a rugged, like, this is Johnny
Rusty
Cash.
Rusty Cage,
like,
it was like, that's
Rusty
Johnny
Cage.
Cash.
Listen, Johnny everything, Cash Sea of Heartbreak, Robo.
Don't you love Rusty Cage?
From,
I love
yeah.
it. Mine too.
It
and
has,
when the man
it
comes
been,
around and God's going to cut you down, two of my favorites.
Oh, it kept getting,
just kept getting better. Yeah,
it's like,
it did.
And I just remember... We wore that out, memorized it as a small kid. Like,
Unchained.
He and I memorized, yes, the whole record,
yeah.
everything.
Oh,
the
right.
drunk, Lord Have Mercy, the Kneeling Drunkards. I mean, everything on that record
it's
was
amazing,
so unbelievable.
Record. You know why? Because Rick Rubin let him do what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
That's why it's so great.
Yeah.
He said, "I want you to just do what you want to do. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I want you to pick the songs." So he started listening to every song. A Solitary Man is another one of my very favorites. You know, he had songs that he liked by other artists that he wanted to do, and they let him do what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did what he wanted is when he was reborn.
Was there ever a point in his career where he felt like maybe it was over?
Yes, in the 80s.
Mm.
I remember him saying, "I'm just not making money anymore. My records aren't selling." CBS had fired him. And the guy that fired him got fired. You just don't fire Johnny Cash. He's been on Columbia Records since 1958, and this guy fires him. Mm-hmm. Well, Dad and I are in Jamaica. We're just about to leave to go to the beach. And you know the picture of Dad flipping the bird?
Yeah.
Okay. Dad and I are just about to leave. Rick Rubin calls, and he says, John, I want to take out a $10,000 page in Billboard, and I want you the picture of you flipping the bird, and I want it to say, Johnny Cash would like to thank Nashville for their support. And Dad said, I can't decide. Here, I'm going to give you my daughter and let her decide. Hands me the phone.
And you said?
And I said, do it. Yes. And that picture came out, and it was everywhere. And I said, Dad, what have I done?
What did I do?
What have I done? Oh, my God. Everywhere you went on Music Row, they would have that on their bulletin board or hanging on their wall or framed. Or I'm like, it's everywhere downtown on Music Row. It's everywhere. He goes, good, good. And then he said, my mama wouldn't like that picture too much,
though. Okay, so wait a second. So CBS, okay.
CBS fired him.
Right.
I shouldn't say CBS, one person fired him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he wasn't selling records in the 80s.
And that person got fired.
Okay,
but you said Rick Rubin.
Well, Rick Rubin comes. Well, then he went to another label, and they weren't doing anything with him, and then Rick Rubin came along and saved his career.
So he knew, he already knew Rick Rubin when
no.
This, oh, okay.
He, when they met, he said, so tell me what Dad said, so tell me what you do.
Yeah.
And he said, well, mostly I produce heavy metal and right. And Dad's going, really? And he goes, but I want you to do whatever you want to do. And Dad said he just had a feeling that this was where he should go. This guy knew him. This guy talked to him like he knew what Dad wanted. Mm. He knew that Dad didn't want to record these silly songs anymore that he'd been recording, and that's why his records weren't selling, and he felt like this guy knew his heart, knew where he wanted, what Dad wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, I think I'm gonna work with him a day and see what happens. And they did, and it was over. That was the beginning. That was the beginning of it.
Yeah, the rest. I mean, look what happened.
I know. It's amazing.
Golly.
It's amazing what
Golly.
Rick Rubin saved. Our dad saying to me one time, you know what, Cindy? He said, I feel like it's the 50s again. Oh. The young people love me. the young people like me again. And so June was in the hospital for something. I forget what. I mean, it wasn't anything serious. But Dad said, you want to go with me to Atlanta? I'm going to be doing a show. It's going to be in a small place, and I'm really not sure what's going to, you know, how big of a place it is or what, but it's just going to be me and the guitar, no band. So we get there, and I'm the oldest person in the room. I mean, literally, I was. And all these kids are literally screaming and singing every word to his songs, and it's just him and the guitar. Well, this one girl, she was really pretty. She was standing next to me, and I'm up front where Dad could see us, and she goes, and right in the middle of his song, she goes, I love you, Johnny. Mm-hmm. And he stopped the song and said, I love you too, baby.
Wow.
And then he starts singing again, and I was like, I wanted to say quit flirting, but but that made him feel so good, you know, that young people liked him again.
Yeah.
He said, I feel like it's the 50s.
I remember one time in LA, I don't think we had lived there yet, but we were in LA, and we found out he was at the House of Blues, and this would have been.
He was also at the Viper Room.
Yeah.
The House of Blues.
Yeah, people went absolutely crazy.
Yeah, and at the Viper Room, Johnny Depp was there. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of, I forget who else was.
Okay,
a lot of people.
So this is a poem about her. Everything she's talked about, the cage and
the farm. I love that book.
And this is, you know, it's the cage, and this is her poem, her story, and you can read it.
But he wrote it. You wrote it, didn't
you? I wrote it, but you don't, that's not important. It's your.
I got to get my glasses on. Oh, it's on the back?
Yeah. I'll read it to you. I'll read it if you want.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
You okay, Brian?
Are you all right?
You all right?
Yeah, you read it because I don't feel real weird just reading it.
Let's see.
This farm is everything, was everything to him. Actually, this Brian put this book out, and I love it. It's one of my favorite books about the farm because it really does tell the heart and soul of the farm.
It says on the cover, Johnny Cash's former hideaway. Edited by Cindy Cash. Okay. On the back, there's a poem. Did you write this poem, Brian?
It doesn't matter. It's her story.
I know. But he wrote the poem inspired. Okay, got it. It's called The Cage. Though every day more feeble, he still could shake the cage. Through a daughter's eyes, he read the book, his own made weak by age. Confined now to a wheelchair, he had a guarantee from the one who made the lame walk and caused the blind to see. Now he runs upon the rainbow and all his chains are gone. He can see the farthest galaxy and dance beyond the dawn. As he joined the new creation, he let his praises soar. Though broken down in this world, he crashed through heaven's door.
Isn't that beautiful? There's another poem.
That's beautiful, Brian.
What's the other poem in there that you wrote?
It's called Bonacqua.
That talks about, wasn't it some story I told you?
Remember, this is when I didn't know nothing. So she told me all the stories. So all I did is just put on paper what she told me.
Yeah, but he wrote them beautifully.
That's what Junior used to do.
He's shaking his butt at you, Sally.
But these are important because this captures the soul of what she told us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is all about Johnny Cat. Okay, this. And it's actually some, but you got to speak up a little bit.
I think, Jack.
I think it's okay. Brian. What? They have him turned up.
Don't worry about it. You can't hear it because you're sitting back there listening to room noise.
Let's see if this is the one I was talking about.
Bonacqua by Brian Oxley. Okay. Upon a porch, upon a hill, I found a rare breed. As he sang, the water flowed. I could not catch my breath. A thin space between earth and sky where he sat and strummed his tunes. Beneath six angels' watchful gaze, bright wings parted wide. Let the hills break forth in singing and the trees of the field clap their hands. Is that the right page? Yeah.
That's not the one I was talking about, but...
Okay.
But that one's beautiful, too.
Did you write this whole book?
Yeah.
Brian? Okay.
Let me see. I'm going to show you this.
Those six
angels on the front of the house.
Oh.
They were on my house. And he goes, I want those. I said, me too. And he goes, no, I want them on the farm. I said, okay. Oh. So I took them down and brought them here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think it's near the front. It's a... Wait a minute.
Let's do something with, since we have this, since there's this
book. I don't
have
my glasses on.
And we do the podcast at this farm. You know what I mean? There's an opportunity.
I'm hitting the microphone.
Yeah, sure.
You don't have to worry about it.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome.
You just talk.
My glasses are over there. I can't see this. I can't see this book. I have to have my glass. Do you mind?
Cindy, what did y'all do? So when y'all would come out of the farm and it was you and your dad, what would y'all do out here?
Oh, he taught me how to drive in this field when I was 13. Thank you. When I was 13 or 14 in a Jeep, because he said if I didn't learn how to drive using a clutch, I never would learn. So he taught me how to drive using a clutch in the Jeep right there. And I said, why can't we go on the road? He said, because you don't know how to drive yet. So we learned how right there. And then he taught me how to shoot a gun, which I still shoot guns today. I love shooting guns. We would put cans and stuff and shoot guns. And that, you saw the gun, the bullet holes in the ceiling in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did they tell you that story?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Okay, that was the day he taught me how to shoot a gun.
Oh, no.
And he said, let's see what you learned today. And he shot a gun, a hole in the ceiling. And I said, in the house? He goes, yeah, see how close you can come to mine. And so I did. side. And he goes, and don't tell June what, if she sees these, what these are. And so I shot, and it was like this close to his. And so he goes, okay, we're going to empty our guns, and whoever makes the straightest line wins.
In the house.
In the house. In the living room. So we shot. We shot, and, it, and we were still like straight going down. I mean, like we each had a straight line. We got to the fifth bullet, and his went off to the side a little, and mine didn't, and it went all the way straight down. I went, I won. And he said, no, I'm just a good teacher. So he's trying to still take the credit, but I won. And then we learned, I mean, he taught me how to go frog gigging in this pond back here.
Mm-hmm.
And snuck out at midnight that night with Rosie, my stepsister, and went frogging and without him. And she didn't put rubber boots on. And we got back to the house, and she was covered in leeches. And Dad was asleep because he didn't know we snuck out. And all of a sudden, you hear blood-curdling screams, and she's just covered in leeches.
Oh, wow. Oof.
And June's like pouring salt all over her, and they start dropping off, and... Oh, it was gross.
Oh, jeez, that sounds awful.
He goes, may I ask what you girls were doing out here frogging at midnight? And I said,
What is frog? Is frogging just catching frogs?
Frogging is if somebody shines a light on it and it freezes, they'll freeze. And like big bullfrogs, they'll freeze. Yeah. They won't move. And then the other person stabs it in the back of the neck, and
oh god,
and then they're still alive. But then Dad would take them to the front porch of the farm because it's brick steps. Take them by their legs and slam their head against the Isn't this nice?
I don't know if I want to do this.
And knock them out, and then cut their legs off, and we would fry their legs and eat them.
Wow,
they I didn't good. Know that. That's how they did. That, like I didn't good. Know that was an option, just to grab them and. Knock
that,
well,
that was
like
Dad's
that.
Option. I wish oh. I had. I wish I had a video of him cleaning a catfish.
the Johnny Cash way.
Decapitated rabbit. Oh gosh, he wanted to take me and my brother coon hunting one time. Now coon hunting is where you take the dogs and they tree the raccoon. Well, as soon as we got there, the dogs took off and we couldn't find them. So we saw this big white rabbit. And Dad goes, wait, there's a rabbit. At least we'll go home with a rabbit. And he shoots it. And I went, I was like, oh, God, why did you kill it? And he goes, it's breakfast. So the guy that was with us that was taking us, picks him up by his head, does this, twists his head off. And then Dad goes, let me have him. And I'm already back in the van because I don't want to watch this. And Dad sits him right next to me and says, Herman wants to sit by you. So the next morning Dad calls me in for breakfast. Guess what's on my plate? Herman.
Oh my god.
The rabbit. I said, I don't think I'm hungry this morning.
Herman the rabbit.
He named it Herman. He called everybody on the road Herman.
Really?
He'll say, when I was driving, he'd go, watch out, baby, for Herman. Herman's coming around to the left. I mean, everybody was Herman. I don't know why.
Even the rabbit.
He was the funniest man ever.
Really? Okay, can I talk to you about his sense of humor?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay, so please tell me about like, what was he, was he just always telling jokes? Was he, did
around,
he enjoy?
Not in public, but around, he loved to make me laugh.
Really?
It was almost like he lived to make me laugh. And then he actually said this on a interview one time, but one of my favorite things he would say is, I do my best thinking when June's talking. That was one of my favorites. Mm. But then one time we're on stage, okay, June is on a stool with her auto harp, and June and Mother Maybelle had died like 3 years earlier. And Dad and I are standing in front of the drums waiting for her to get through talking and talking and talking. And I think Dad was getting bored, but she said, we lost Mama Maybelle 3 years ago. Dad leans over to me and he goes, I know where she is. And I couldn't quit laughing. And June turns around and kind of looks at us like, it's not funny. And Dad was just standing there like he didn't say one word.
I know where she is.
I know where she is.
Oh my gosh.
We lost Mama Maybelle.
What was his sense of humor like? Was it more like dry? Was
it
like all over the place?
Dry and sarcastic sometimes.
Really?
But funny. Really? Like Farron Young's last wishes were to be cremated and have his ashes thrown off Dad's boat dock.
Okay.
Well, a big wind picked up as we're throwing it. Okay. And it went all over Dad.
Oh, no.
And the whole... Oh, my God. Now, Farron, if any of your family is listening, he meant it in the best way because he loved your dad or your brother or your whatever. But we're walking through the house all day long. Dad was going, get off me, Farron. Get off me. Get off me. Get off. And you just have to see him doing it because he was so funny. He just was the funniest person.
You know
what?
Can I tell you
ever.
Something? Sure. I don't know how much you know about me, but I have a long history for 15 years of doing a lot of hidden camera pranks and stuff like that. Okay.
Oh, cool.
So I even got to work with Dick Clark Productions for a while when they brought bloopers and practical jokes
oh,
back
you're
to
kidding.
TV.
No, I did
all
that show.
I produced all the episodes and did all these pranks. And one prank that we did when we lived in Huntington Beach is I went out with Jake, my son, and my Uncle John. And we went to the Huntington Beach pier and we had some kind of container. It looked like an urn. It was like some kind of a vase. And it was kind of a windy day too. It was a little on the windy side. And they went out dressed really nice in suits and everything like that. And I filmed this one. I wasn't in this one. It was just you and Uncle John. And here they were, and they were being so respectful. Oh, she would have loved this. And they pour it out. Where did the ashes come from? The barbecue grill at home, right? Yeah. And we got confronted, and this poor lady, she was mortified, and she walked up to Jake.
No.
And she says, don't do this. What you're doing is terrible. You can't be doing this.
Well, it's like, I mean, some of it was crude, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would never have said some of the things he said in front of anybody else.
Sure.
Except the family.
Yeah.
But it was his lifelong thing to make me laugh and to, because he would say, you're so pickable. Pickable. You're just fun to pick on.
Yeah. He'd pick on you.
Thanks, Dad. Appreciate it. You know.
Wow.
Or he thought my skin was so soft. He would go up to total strangers and go, feel how soft her skin is. I'm like, uh-uh. I don't want them to feel.
I don't want strangers touching my face.
He was just funny. He was so funny. I'm trying to find this poem. I can't find it.
Would you say that he was a fart humor kind of guy?
A what?
Fart humor kind of guy.
What do you mean?
Did he find farts funny?
Well, he did if he was doing it to me. If he was doing it right next to me. No, I shouldn't have said that. Just sorry, Dad.
I've seen his, what's that video, Brian? You showed me a video one time of, it's on YouTube where he's wearing that like silly crown and the pig nose. And
the one you have.
Yeah, yeah. What video was that from?
Jack Clement.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, they were really close.
Yeah,
I was there when they filmed all that.
Yeah, and
that was the funniest thing. The pig nose?
Yeah.
This is how pigs looks at the wind. And then he just kept doing his head like that. And what does that mean?
Okay.
Here's that poem. I found that poem.
Okay.
You have the crown too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You want to give it back?
You have the crown.
Jeez,
wait, you have the crown that he was wearing.
Oh,
it was a gift. Yeah, I've got. You would not believe. It is one of the most prized things that I have, Brian. I'm so grateful for that. I tell so many people that I'm going to bring it on the show.
I don't know if I can read this.
The comedian's hat.
Oh, Jim Varney's the Ernest hat. Yeah, that was pretty neat too. Yeah.
I don't know if I can read this. Oh, my gosh.
Did your dad know Jim Varney?
Yeah. He knew everybody.
Wow.
I didn't tell you this. You probably should hear the story before I read this. It was the last time I saw my dad, and it's really difficult to tell if I'll try to tell it, though. Dad did not want me to see him die, and I didn't realize that's what it was at the time, but... He was up and dressed every morning before me. By 5 o'clock, he was dressed, sitting at his desk, and just sitting at his desk, you know, waiting for the phone, somebody to call. And every day I would push his wheelchair outside, and he would hear the birds and he'd go, that's a sparrow, that's a hawk. He knew what every bird was. And then he'd go, okay, I'm ready to take a nap. And I would take him back in, and he'd get up from his nap, get dressed again. This was every day. He didn't just sit around in his pajamas. Well, this morning, I walked in. He hadn't woke me up. And I walked in his bedroom, and he was in his bed still, in his pajamas. And I said, what are you doing in that bed? Get up out of that bed. It's already whole 6 o'clock, and you're still in the bed. He goes, I don't feel too good today, baby. I think I'm just going to lay here for a while. And immediately I had a bad feeling. And he said, and by the way, you're going to go to California today. I said, no, I'm not. I'm not leaving you. I haven't left you in 3 months. I'm not leaving you. He said, no, you need a break, honey. You need a break. Eddie, I want to see my husband. He would come up on weekends because we lived out of state. He said, I want you to take her to California. You can bring her back Sunday. And it was Friday. I just want her to have a break. Go see her mom. Go see her daughter. She can come back Sunday. I said, Dad, I'm not leaving. I mean, this went on for like 2 hours. I'm not leaving you. And he said, I want you to go, baby. I really want you to go. I want you to take the break. And he said, Eddie, please make her go. And so after like 2 hours of this, I finally said, I will be back Sunday, Dad. And he said, okay, I know you will. And so I went and packed a bag and I went to say goodbye to him. And I hugged him and I said, I love you. He said, I love you too. And just as I'm going out the door, I heard, God bless you, Cindy. Just real quiet. God bless you, Cindy. And I squeezed my husband's hand and I said, I'm never going to see him again. And he said, yeah, you will. And I got to my mother's house at 11 o'clock that night. And at 2 a.m., the phone rang. And it was my brother. And he said, he's gone, honey. I said, what? He said, Dad's gone. I said, no, he's not. He's not gone because I'm not there. I was just in denial. And I said, don't ever call me and say that to me again. And I hung up on him. And my mom walks in about that time and she's crying. And then I thought, oh my gosh, he's gone. And my brother calls right back and he goes, I'm so sorry, Cindy, but he's gone. I said, I was supposed to be there. If I were there, he would still be here. It's my fault. You know, I took all the blame because I had been taking care of him all this time. And my Mark told me that his dad told him, the day that dad passed away, he said, my brother called me yesterday and he said the hardest thing he ever did was put Cindy on a plane. So anyway, I was going to read this poem that Brian wrote that's I think is so beautiful. It's short. A Stoned World is called. Dad, am I invisible? Can you see me? Can you see my smile, my tears? In the night, I know your soul sees me. Dad, when did you last laugh? In the dark or in the light? I read to you in the night. Did you trust my brown eyes? When you said, God bless you, Cindy, did you know the unknowable? Did you ever know a friend when you signed your name? Dad, I thought you'd stay a while longer and rest your weary body. And now I see Jacob's ladder pitched between heaven and your farm. Say goodbye to him, Dad. I mean, say goodbye to your farm, Dad. Say goodbye to the stoned world. I think that's the one most beautiful thing Brian's ever written.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You kind of have to know the story to get the poem, but that's why I thought I should tell the story. But I usually don't get through it without crying. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. But anyway. And you got through some of those tears before the poem, too, so.
Pardon?
You got through some of those tears before you even read the poem, too, so that probably helped.
I know, I tried.
Helped you a little
bit. I tried. I did good, didn't I, Sally? Yes. That's probably one of the best great. I've ever done.
Yeah.
I'm usually going, oh, yeah. I know. What do you say after that?
I want to say, yeah, it's so good. What I wanted to say was, it's.
I couldn't see it because I was crying and I couldn't read. I had to keep going. What does that say?
Yeah. I just really appreciate you sitting down and talking to me.
Well, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this. And
you're very welcome. About Sally. Oh, Brian is over there.
Something about Sally.
Sally Wally. We call her Saint Sally. Because she's
Saint
one of
Sally.
The,
oh
Saint
my
Sally.
Gosh! Yeah, there's no better name than
that. Yeah, we call
whatever
her,
it is. Saint should be
I
first.
I call her Sally Wally or Saint Sally, but everybody calls her Saint Sally.
Yeah.
She's the sweetest, kindest woman you'll ever meet in your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she puts up with that guy.
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. I will be kidding.
See,
my favorite thing is when I'm having a conversation with Brian. And something will pop into his head randomly.
Yeah,
but he has no idea where.
Sally, get me a coat.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah. Or he wants to show me something, but he has no idea where anything is.
So Sally. So,
Sally. Yeah, right in the middle of it. Sally.
He's very famous.
But you know, it's funny.
That.
Sometimes.
And do
sometimes,
you ever see her do anything but pop up and do it?
Right. And not only that, Cindy, but sometimes by the time he says the word Sally, she's already bringing it back.
Because she can read his
she
mind.
She knows, right? I know. She knows what's coming next. Yeah.
He'll be talking to you about something, and then all of a sudden he wants to show it to you.
I know.
She's already went and got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I love her to death. I love them both.
Would you do this again sometime?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because there's
I hope
more.
I did okay.
Oh, it's so great. Yeah, I just feel like we're able to have a great natural conversation.
I'm pretty open
it was so
person.
Good.
My sisters get on to me for that, but oh well, that's just me.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
A lot.
Thank you too.
I love to be able to share things about him with people.
Awesome. Well, we're gonna have a ton more questions.
Okay.
Another day, I'm sure. Mac, do you got any last words or questions?
Yeah, you got me teary eyed over here. That whole story. It's really touching.
It is. It was so sad.
And I just say that anyone has to go through pain. It stinks.
We were very, very close. I was the daddy's girl. So
he actually says it in your book that you were his favorite.
He actually does. I'm like, oh, great. Now, no wonder my sisters don't talk to me anymore. I like the first sentence. Cindy has fire.
Well, I admire you too. The last period of time you spent with your dad, just being there, like that's. Sorry.
Nobody was.
It's
there.
Admirable.
Nobody else was.
To be with someone in those last period of time, and
I wouldn't take $1 million for 1 minute of it, because that's when he told me so many things. He gave me things I never took. One thing out of that house, unless he gave it to me, I know my siblings were probably thinking she can take whatever she wants out of it. I mean, not that they were thinking that's what I was going to do, but you know, they were probably, you know, she can take whatever she wants out of there. But I think they know that I wouldn't do that. That I'm very, I would never take a thing from him unless he gave it to me.
But one of them was upstairs with a locksmith. Johnny yelled up, "I'm not dead yet."
One of them was what?
Upstairs with a locksmith. And Johnny yelled up the steps, "I'm not dead yet." Seriously.
That sounds just like him. I'm not dead yet.
Kiss my cat.